all the distinguished invitees, our guests, and dear friends. I would like to welcome you wholeheartedly to this Prerna program. Today's topic is a very interesting one. IQ, EQ and SQ. IQ deals with your intelligence, and especially no one wants to admit that he has deficient or less intelligence. But the way in which this thing developed and the way in which it is being used nowadays, it's a lot different than what it was meant. During the course of getting information about what exactly is IQ, I came across a library entry where it said that IQ primarily was meant to test your school performance. That's all. But now, even your SATs and GMAT and GREs and all that, they also have an element of understanding your logic, your numerical attitude, mathematics. But again and again, people are realizing that a high IQ doesn't guarantee happiness or success in life. I'll show you some information about how these things were tabulated. We'll go with some definitions. Isaac Newton, of course, the fellow who found out the law of gravity, supposed to have a very high IQ, isn't it? One day, his servant saw that he had made a hole in the partition. So he said, "Master, what is this hole for?" He said, "Well, the cat, which is my pet cat, she finds it difficult to cross over the wall and go from one room to another. So I have made a hole for her." After some days, the cat had kittens. So Newton made a smaller hole for the kittens to pass through. So his servant asked that, "Why the second one?" He said, "Well, the bigger one is for the cat, the smaller is for the kitten." So he said, "But can't both of them use the same one?" And he said, "Oh, that's a good idea." Of course, it's not a slur on his reputation. But what exactly do we mean by these concepts, and if someone doesn't have them, what is he supposed to do? And the most important question, can spirituality help a person with a low IQ? I'm sure one research scholar said that even those who do research on intelligence, and they say that these tests, these IQ tests, they don't tell you the real picture of your intelligence, and don't take it so seriously, but secretly they also try their tests and see whether they are, where do they stand. It so happens that in the 21st century, Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party, some of the prominent members of that party were having exceptionally high IQs. And what did they do? They unleashed horror, terror upon untold millions of people. One mental health professional, as that's what psychologists and psychiatrists prefer themselves to call nowadays. I am a mental health professional. So this person says, will you call a doctor, an MD doctor, who smokes 4 packets of cigarettes a day, intelligent? Would you call a Nobel Prize winner who gets married for the 4th time, intelligent? I mean, he has a very high IQ, but he can't manage his family. Or would you call a very successful business executive who commits suicide at the age of 37, intelligent? But they are. So what is this thing called intelligence? In fact, one expert, he says, I don't know whether we should even study IQ or other things when we don't know what intelligence is. What exactly is intelligence? Is someone with a big head intelligent? The blue sperm whale, which is the largest mammal, the largest animal alive on this planet, it's a whale, it's a fish. Its brain, its heart is the size of a car. It's so big, its heart. And its brain also weighs many, many kilos. But that doesn't mean it is very intelligent. And while there are small birds who can make wonderful nests, which even man may be having difficulty in making them. So is man the most intelligent animal? Everyone says yes. Especially all members of the human species agree that they are the most intelligent. But the problem is, we haven't taken the opinion of the other party. Like, there is a folk tale of a man who has friendship with a lion. And he says, we are very powerful. I am more intelligent than you. And as they are going by, they are passing through some caves. And the man shows the lion, look, there is a drawing in the cave which shows a man killing a lion single-handedly with just a knife in his hand. The lion said, yes, but all these carvings are done by men. If we were to show our own side of the story, it would be the other way. So, what is this thing called intelligence? Where does the mind come in? And now IQ, if that is not sufficiently proving to be useful, so-called intelligent people are also living very, very unhappy lives. So some people have come up with, no, wait, IQ is not the answer. There is emotional intelligence quotient. And then what is that? They say, well, that's your ability to handle your and others' emotions. So you keep cool and don't get excited. Don't be aggressive. Listen actively. Easier said than done. It's not so easy to master all these skills. And then there is someone who says, well, IQ also is not true. EQ also is not that good. Spirituality quotient. What is your spiritual intelligence? What is that spirit? Those who are students of economics or commerce may have gone through one theory by American economist called Abraham Maslow. Maslow's theory of hierarchy of needs. He starts with basically core physiological needs. Food, as we say in India, roti, kapda, makan. These are the basic needs. If you don't get that, if somebody is hungry and you say, okay, I'll sing a very nice song for you, he won't be happy with that. He says, food first, give me some food. You satisfy your physiological needs, then your sociological needs, they have to be met. Human beings need to be belonging to others. We need to have that, as one Englishman said, No man is an island. No man is an island. We all need that connection. After that, come your needs of emotion. Then comes self-esteem. I need to know how I am seen by others. And at the topmost end of the pyramid, Maslow called it self-actualization. And he actually said, I don't know what it means. Because there are no teachers who will teach you self-actualization. How disappointing. Someone with his speculative mind actually found out something, which is the ABCD of Bhagavad Gita. This book, written by Prabhupada, the very second chapter begins with what Abraham Maslow used his whole life to do his research and finally came to the conclusion that I don't think there are any people who know. There are no teachers on this subject and there are no practitioners. But he said that actualization is something which everybody aims for. So today we are going to see what that actualization actually is and how, if and all, in today's age, we can practice it. So we start with some definitions. What is intelligence? There are some 3-4 people who have given out various definitions. One is saying it's the ability to carry out abstract thinking. Next. It's the capacity for knowledge and knowledge possessed. How do you increase your capacity? How do you maintain it? Next. The capacity to learn or to profit by experience. And finally, somebody got so bored with these definitions that they came up with the last one. Intelligence is what you do when you don't know what to do. Believe me, this is not a joke. I'm not taking it from some humor book. These are actually the products of some very high-scale research into the brain field. It's a very exciting thing that most of you, when you expect to pass out from your schools and colleges, you expect to be ready for the job, for the world. And sadly, most of you will go through this. I'm not hoping it for you, but it is going to happen based on previous experience. Almost 95% of you will come to a boss who says that from tomorrow, do as I say. Don't tell me that this was taught by my professor in my school or my college. Forget everything. This is the real life. And you may say, this is the real life? What was that life then? I spent 15 of the best years of my life. We had a friend visiting our temple from London. He said, I have a graduation in the philosophy of science. And I said, and what is that? He said, well, scientific understanding as it has developed, it also had some philosophical leanings. Some people were like Galileo and Copernicus. They were not just scientists. They also were philosophical people. So that was my subject. And what do you do now? He said, I worked for a bank selling consumer goods schemes. I said, what connection does philosophy of science graduation have with selling people, you know, credit cards and all these things? He said, well, that's what I have to do to earn my bread. But what I like is graphics and designing. Now just imagine, this is the 21st century we live in. Here we have someone who is trained by our so-called educational system into a perfect graduate. Now we also hear in India people saying, BCom ko koi kimmat nahi. What will you do with that certificate? It's not worth the paper it is printed on. At one point of time, people used to write BCom BA under their names on their doors. Like so and so, Mr. R. P. Patil, BA. Don't laugh. At one point of time, it had some worth. Even a SSC fail was considered some kind of worthy person. And of course, we also have Mark Twain, the famous American novelist, who lamented that, I was born a genius, but schooling spoiled me. So, neither the current educational system people are interested in seeing whether you have any IQ or not. They just want you to eat a lot of data. At the right time, when the examination bell begins, vomit it out as fast as possible on your paper and get away with it. That's all. How do you expect such people to be happy in life if they don't know what intelligence is? If the very first day your boss tells you, forget everything, that thing doesn't work here. So we need some practical knowledge. And most youngsters are so disappointed when they feel at the age of 21, I have to start learning again. I thought now it's the time to enjoy. So therefore, this world may throw at us different concepts. You have to be very high on IQ, you have to be very high on EQ, and their idea of what SQ is. We have our own foolproof system. So that we shall see later. Shall we go on to the next? It is said that, now this is something just as a matter of statistics, 50% of all of us, human society, our IQ is between 90 and 100. 2.5% are very superior, above 130. But believe me, all of Hitler's assistants all were at least 160 and 170. So you also can do a lot of damage. 2.5% are under 70, mentally retarded. And 0.5% are supposed to be geniuses, over 140. And these geniuses have a society of their own. Anyone knows what it means? The name of the society is? Mensa. Now they are a society of super high IQ people. Surprisingly, they haven't contributed to any new discovery, invention, socially upliftment scheme, or anything which is worthwhile in society today, except come out with a few puzzle books and somehow they are surviving, and they are saying that we are high intelligent. Maybe your world, your problems are so low that, you know, we find it a little bit embarrassing to try to come and solve them. So they are smugly secure in their own ivory tower up there somewhere. So one person tried to understand, why do intelligent people fail? If success means money, fame, hard work, getting the job you want, in the company you want, at the location you want, getting the life partner you want, why do successful people fail otherwise? Before we go there, I'd like to share you my own experience. I was traveling to Goa and I had a book, but while traveling the book tends to get a bit damaged. So I put a newspaper covering. That newspaper covering had a news item on it that one businessman along with his entire family jumped down from his skyscraper building. Normally we hear somebody jumps alone, but here he convinced his whole family. And it was very, very traumatic, conservative society. So, since the book was in my hands for 3-4 days, every time I would pick up the book, that news item would catch my attention. So, after coming here, I decided, we'll do something about it. It's not very far away. So, I told one devotee, just go there and tell them that I am the local Hare Krishna center representative. And that news item said, the police are going to give this society members some stress management program. How to deal with their stress. Now, we have done some programs for the police. So, I thought we are justified in offering our services. And I said, we are not interested in the money part or whatever. We are also part of the same community. So, we are offering some service. So, he went there. And naturally, in a high-rise society, South Bombay location, he was not allowed inside. People said, maybe he has come for donations or what exactly does he want. But then the secretary of that society, the man employed there, he said, okay, come, what do you want? He explained that we would like to help, if at all you would like to accept our help. One lady came, seeing that there is some discussion going on, and he said, what happened? She asked, what happened? So he said, we would like to do some program for you. He said, this is a problem today. Just because our name comes in the papers, does it mean that only we have suicide problems? People commit suicide all over Bombay. I'm going to write a strong letter to the papers. Don't give our society such a bad name. So he was surprised that instead of accepting some help, people were angry that their society is getting a bad name. One more person pulled up in his car and he said, hey, what's up? So he explained that we would like to offer you some service. He said, suicide? Here? In our society? I don't know. He said, no, but it came in the papers. It's the same name. Maybe in the other wing over there. Not in my wing at least. It has only 3 wings. So we lead such an isolated lifestyle today that we don't even know. And if there are some problems, we would rather wish to hide them under the rug rather than deal with them. So intelligence, as we know, of solving some mathematical problems or thinking very logically, is not sufficient for tackling today's main challenges. Let's go through. Now, this is not something which we have found out. Devotees have, we have our own scriptures, we have our own body of knowledge. This is what people who are expert in this field outside, dealing with these problems on a daily basis, they are saying. So this is the list. Why intelligent people fail? Lack of motivation. Is there a motivational pill you should buy from the pharmacy and just take a pill, pop a glass of water, pop a pill and well, you are motivated. No. That thing only happens in cartoon films where somebody says, oh, I am the hero or whatever, He-Man, master of the universe. It doesn't happen in real life. If you feel down, you go deeper down. Lack of impulse control. Lack of perseverance. Fear of failure. We had a Prerna lecture many, many weeks ago. How to deal with failure? Is failure really bad? Or do we learn something from it? Procrastination. Procrastination means to just keep on putting things for the next day. Inability to delay sense gratification. Today people, we need everything now. Too little or too much self-confidence. Now this is something which I'm sure many of you have seen in your own life or someone nearby. And these are the main emotional issues facing us today. So how do we understand what is the real success formula? With your intelligence, which gives you rational thinking, decision making, good, bad, all these things, and with your mind, which is the seat of emotions, and you get the feeling of who cares, I like, I'll do it. Let us see a small skit about what is the main function of the mind, of the intelligence. Whether am I the mind, am I my intelligence? The Bhagavad Gita clearly explains, Bhumirapo nalo vayu khammano buddhirevacha ahankara itiyamme binna prakriti rashtadha. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that material nature, what you and me see outside, is not just like one layer. It is made up of many ingredients. It's like you may see a cake. A lot of preparation and lot of ingredients have gone into it. So when the baker comes and tells you, I use this first, I put this one, I put it for some time, then it began to rise, and now I have baked it, and this is in front of you. Similarly, Lord Krishna, who originally has created these elements, and who has put it, he is saying that basically what you see in this world is earth, bhumi, water, fire, air, ether. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are the five gross elements. Mind, intelligence and ego. These are the subtle elements. Just like somebody has his dress. He has a blue coat, blue trousers, and then he has clothes which he's wearing underneath them. So the mind, intelligence and ego, these three elements of our personality are within us. Now, we have never seen the mind. Has anyone seen the mind? Your mind or anyone's mind? We just say, mind your own business. But where is the mind? Where is my mind? It is, if somebody is very angry, very upset, not eager to do anything, you say he's out of his mind. We say the mind is here. But we can't locate it. Even the most expert brain surgeon has not been able to find out the mind. Because the mind is not gross, which can be touched. The mind only can be felt. So, the mind has distinct functions. Thinking, feeling and willing. Please remember, thinking, feeling and willing. The mind is a bank of thoughts. It is a repository of thoughts. It can think about something and then it can start feeling about something. And then comes the question of willing. I have to do it. Intelligence is subtler, sukshma. It is subtler than the mind. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. So intelligence deals with yes, no, good, bad. Do it, don't do it. No question of any feeling or emotions here. The problem begins when the intelligence, which is supposed to be more subtle, higher, intelligence is higher than the mind. But the mind starts controlling the intelligence. The Vedas describe the human body like a chariot. At that time, the chariot was the only means of conveyance. A chariot has four wheels, chariot's body, five horses, a passenger, and the charioteer. So the gross body, our body, is like the main chariot's body. Our senses, eyes, nose, skin, mouth, ears, they are like the five horses. intelligence is the charioteer. Mind is the lagam, the reins. The passenger is you and me. We are sitting on this chariot. Now, I often ask these questions in our self-excellence seminars or any seminar which has to do with interpersonal relationship. If in today's times, instead of a chariot, take an example of a taxi. If a taxi is going very fast on the Western Express Highway from one part of Bombay to other part of Bombay, what factors are making the taxi go fast? So people say, well, the taxi is very nicely clean, built. It's a very fast car. Yes. It has enough petrol or diesel in it. Yes. The instruments and the navigation and everything is top class. Yes. The tires are very good. They have enough air in them. The driver is very skillful. He's very expert. But the most important reason is there is a passenger behind and he is saying, "Charge gate chalo." If you ask a taxi wala as you go left that, "Can you go to Mira Road?" He said, "Yes, of course. Why don't you go?" He says, "There is no passenger behind. Why should I go?" "You don't know the road?" "I know the road. You don't have petrol?" He says, "Everything is there. The road is there. Diesel is there. I am able. But why should I go unless there is somebody behind?" So please try to understand. The mind, intelligence, they may be powerful, less powerful, whatever they are. There has to be the passenger who takes the decision where to go. If he makes a wrong decision, why should you blame the tires or the petrol or the driver or the steering wheel or whatever? So let us see our skit. Is it ready? See a portrayal of what must have happened in your life before. The mind takes us to one direction, intelligence in the other. Who are we? We are the living entity, we are the soul, and we are the most powerful. As even today's people are saying, higher than IQ is your ability to deal with emotions. Higher than emotional ability is your spiritual intelligence. So if spirit, which is the most subtle, that is the most powerful, why can't the all-powerful soul just tell his mind, "Shut up"? Because we ourselves have given it the license to make our life miserable. It is like a businessman who hires a servant for keeping his treasury properly, maintaining books of accounts, and very soon the servant takes over all the affairs. And sometimes the boss is saying, the sage is saying, "Like to open the treasury now?" "Not now, in the evening." He says, okay. And we may say, "Who is the boss here?" So similarly, Arjuna, in the midst of the battlefield, he had come there to fight. And then suddenly he lost his composure. Today's analysts list out so many ways in which stress can be ascertained. And if you read the Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, Arjuna is saying, "My mind is reeling. My Gandiva bow is slipping from my hands. I am losing all composure." I'm feeling weak. Why this has to happen? And therefore, Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of all wisdom. And especially in today's terms, we can call it your manual for developing your spiritual intelligence quotient. It was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great 15th century saintly person, who also is an avatar of Krishna, in one of his discussions with Sanatan Goswami, who was not an ordinary person, he was a prime minister of the Nawab of Bengal. So when this highly qualified scholar came to meet Lord Chaitanya, he asked him, "Who am I? What is my duty? What am I supposed to do? Why are the threefold miseries troubling me? Why am I being troubled in this world?" So these are the questions which a spiritually intelligent person will surely ask. Let us now discuss some important elements of SQ according to Bhagavad Gita. Next. Oh yeah, this is some definition of EQ. I'll just quickly go through it. The expression emotional intelligence or EI indicates a kind of intelligence or skill that involves the ability to perceive, assess, and positively influence one's own and other people's emotions. Next. Intelligence regarding the emotions, especially in the ability to monitor one's own or others' emotions and to interact effectively with others. So people are trying to understand how to do it, but there are no tools, there is no knowledge. Next. So in the 13th chapter, verses 8 through 12, Lord Krishna talks of 18 items. Not one or two, but 18. And he says, "Arjun, these 18 comprise what is known as intelligence. Anything other than this is not knowledge." Now just see the confidence with which Krishna gives us something which is called knowledge. Now this knowledge doesn't depend upon your current affairs or business, sports, politics, entertainment knowledge. That which we have is just data. Would you like to buy the Times of India of 1974? All the issues in one volume? You say it's all dead and gone. All the people are dead and gone. All the issues are dead and gone. Most of them. What that information has to do with my life today? Especially when I'm traveling long distance, you find early morning, 6:30, 6:45, the nearest big station, junction station comes. People are eager to buy the newspaper. Oh, let us see what's happening in the world today. We need to be informed. At 8 o'clock, after they have gone through it 3-4 times, they keep it folded. At 12 o'clock, when the meals come in the train, and they find that some dal has been spilled over, that same information piece is torn and is used to clean up as a tissue, or sometimes it's even discarded. Repeatedly having this kind of status for any information piece makes us dull. And when somebody is told that, "Read this book is 5,000 years old," you may say, "Well, if something which is 5 years old, 10 years old is not useful for me now, what makes you think something which is 5,000 years old having any value in my life today?" Let us first see what Krishna says about knowledge, then we'll see whether it is useful or not. This is Bhagavad Gita chapter 13 verses 8 through 12. Krishna says, Amanitvam adambitvam ahimsakshantirarjavam acharyupasanam shaucham sthairyamatma vinigraha indriyartheshu vairagyam anahankara evacha janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukha doshanudarshanam asaktiranabhishvanga putradara grihadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishtopapattishu mai chananya yogena bhaktiravyabhicharini vivikta desha sevitvam aratir janasamsadi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadato nyatha etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yad ato anyatha. In the book Ishopanishad, Prabhupada has given very simple, succinct definitions of all the things which Krishna mentions here, and I have just taken them directly. So, the first item in spiritual knowledge or intelligence is Amanitvam. One should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give respect to others. For adambhitvam, dambha is hypocrisy. One should not pose himself as a religious simply for name and fame. Kshanti, one should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body. Sorry, this is ahimsa. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. So violence is not just killing, cutting somebody's throat. At the spiritual intelligence point of view, violence is to stop someone's spiritual progress. Next, one should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. Kshanti. One should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. That is simplicity. Arjavam. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. Shaucham. In order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. 8. Sthairyam. One must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scriptures. Atma vinigraha. One should completely refrain from the practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. One should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. Indriyartheshu. One should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. One should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. One should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. One should not be more attached to wife, children and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. Anabhishvanga putra dar grihadishu. One should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind. One should become an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and serve him with rapt attention. Here Krishna says, Mai chananya yogena bhakti ravyabhicharini. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture. And one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. One should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. I know it's a long list, and going over each item itself may take a whole seminar. I request you to do some research, as Prabhupada is telling, into these things and see whether these items have they lost any importance over these thousands of years, and whether they are able to sustain our lives, give it some meaning. In our Niti Shastra, there is a story of four friends. They are very thick friends, and they are interested in getting some kind of mystic power. In their search, they come across a very big yogi, and he teaches them parts, not full, but parts of a particular siddhi. As they finish their education, the fourth among them is not a very good person at siddhis, but he has a PhD in common sense, which is very rare. They come across bones of an animal. The first person says, with my application, I can make this skeleton into a very nicely arranged piece. Let us see what it is. So with his power, he arranges his bones, and they find this is the skeleton of a lion. The second one, he says, I can put flesh, marrow and blood over this. The third one says, I can put the skin, the hair and the finishing touches. As they are thinking, the fourth one says, please don't. You might be tempted into exercising your right to use this knowledge, but don't you see it's a lion? And they say, come on, why are you spoiling the fun? This is the first time that we are able to actually exercise and see what we can do with this knowledge. They said, okay, if you want to do it, go ahead. Give me 5 minutes. And then he climbs the top of a tree. So the first one goes ahead with his business. The second one finishes. The third one gives it life. And then when the lion comes, he catches all three of them as his meal. The third or fourth one comes down and laments. If and only if they would have understood that it was a lion. It's not a place to do your experimentation. Similarly, this material world is actually a dangerous place. It's not a place fit for making experiments. But today, we are told that unless you experiment, how will you know what it is? Will you be alive if you want to experiment everything which God has created? Certainly not. So real intelligence doesn't come by reading, doesn't come by observing, it comes by hearing from the right source. Real intelligence comes by hearing from the right source. And Arjun, after hearing everything what Krishna said, he said, my doubts have gone. Now I can do whatever you want me to do. That is the real spiritual intelligence. Now, of course, somebody might still wonder, but don't you need scholarship, knowledge of Sanskrit, or some ability? No. Krishna doesn't expect anything which you don't have. He only wants what has been already given to you. Isn't that the most benevolent aspect of this process? In the process of bhakti yoga, there is nothing to be added. No extra effort needed. The example is given of a lump of gold. If a lump of gold, if it slips from the jeweler's bag and nobody notices it, it falls in a pool of mud, and then over the years so much mud accumulates over it that now people think it to be a rock or something, or a piece of mud. What are we supposed to do, or what are we supposed to add to make it gold again? You need to add some extra gold? No. What somebody might do, if you understand that this big heavy lump is not actually rock or mud, actually it is gold. Just throw it in the furnace. In a blazing fire, whatever is not gold will be burned away. And whatever is gold will burnish, will shine. Similarly, in so many paths, in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, you need to learn so many things. You need to add so many things. In Bhakti Yoga, you just need to kick out some nonsensical things which you have accumulated yourself with the help of the process which Krishna has given. So it's not a process where you have to add something extra to make your life happy. You need to take out those things which are making your life miserable, and your life will automatically be happy. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? We have some time for question answers. So before the question answer session, we'll have a small series of announcements about our guests here.
Hare Krishna. So before we have question answers, there are a few announcements that I would like to make. First, anybody has any questions?
Hare Krishna. Roji, we have heard that we have got five senses. But they say that there is something, sixth sense also. What is that exactly?
The sixth sense, which normally people talk, is a super soul which gives you knowledge. We have five knowledge acquiring senses, five knowledge gathering senses, Karmendriya and Jnanendriya. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that Mattaha Smritir Jnanam Apohanam Cha. So that small voice within, which always tells us sometimes the most crucial thing, don't do this or do this, that is the super soul which gives us knowledge. Any other question?
Just one more announcement. After this question answer session, we request all the devotees to stay back. We will be having ecstatic dancing kirtan.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. You told about the story of the four people who arranged the bones and everything. But scientists are now the cloning. They are cloning human bodies. They are trying to clone the animals and everything. So what do you say about that? Or want your comment on that?
Well, I'm not an expert on this subject, but what a little thing I've heard about it is you still need a living cell from a living person. I would like to speak about something which I, or you also will feel, is now old thing. Remember when they made the first test tube baby, and people were amazed that, wow, now we don't need a mother. We can always have the male sperm and we can have a baby in the test tube. But now they have preferred to go to something else. So Srila Prabhupada, there's a wonderful book which is available downstairs called Life Comes From a Life. He points out that whatever may be the issue of trying to extract from nature more than what nature is willing to give is actually against the laws of material nature, against the laws of God. So, to put it very simply, a dog barks. Now, is that news? No. Dogs are supposed to bark. What's so wonderful about that? But man barks like a dog. Oh, that's news. You might pay money to go to a circus and find out how he's actually barking. And you say, actually, he's really like a dog, huh? Very wonderful. Now, you may be having so many dogs who are naturally barking. So, God has actually made, Krishna says, I give life. But when man wants to imitate God, and then he says that, I am doing it in the name of research, I am doing it in the name of advancement, that appears to be, there is something sinister, there is something wrong in that. In fact, one of our devotee scientists interviewed one scientist and I asked him, what is the rationale, what is the reason behind all these new things which physicists and chemical engineers continue to engage in? And he said, we want to play God. So somebody agrees or somebody doesn't agree. But subconsciously that desire is to imitate God. There is one scientist who cannot speak. He is a cripple. He is a quadriplegic practically. He is on his wheelchair. And he can only speak through some machine. But he is the biggest mind in today's times. And he said, my goal of life is to understand the mind of God. Now, is it possible? As such, look at his own physical state. But that doesn't matter. So when devotees speak against these attempts, it appears as if because we can't do it or because we are jealous of their success. No, it's not like that. On the internet, all these kind of humorous stories are always circulated. One came to me. It is said that Bill Gates, who is one of our high priests of modern technology today, was arguing with God that, I can do everything what you did. And God said, really? He said, yes. So God said, okay. It is described in my books that I can just take mud and breathe life into it. So God took some mud, fashioned it into a shape, and he breathed life into it. And that thing became alive. And Bill Gates said, got you. I can do that same thing. Just watch. So he said, what are you going to do? I have figured out how exactly you do it. That's why they call me the smartest man. So he also took some mud and God said, make your own mud. We can always take something from God. We can always take a living cell and we can clone and make a sheep or so many other things, so many fascinating things can be done. So material nature for a scientist today, his feelings are like a small boy at a village fair. He wants to do everything. He wants to ride the giant wheel, get the balloon, eat the candy and do everything. So similarly with more and more accounting, computing power at hands, people feel that we can map out everything. We can make human beings the way we want. But if you go to the science fiction magazines of 1920s and they would tell you that by the year 1980 or by the year 2000, people would be able to fly. Their life would be so comfortable. There was not a single device or a single time-saving device which was devised to make your life uncomfortable. But if you take a stock of your own life today, do you feel that these fans are a luxury now? You say, oh, so hot. But believe me, when the Taj Mahal Hotel was built, 1907 or something, the luxury rooms were said, described in this way. These rooms have electric fans. and people used to pay a premium to go there. Now even the slums have electric fans. But does it mean we don't have any poor people now? We do have. So therefore, science without that understanding and an application is like those three friends who had the knowledge, but they were using it on something dangerous, which consumed them. And a devotee, he may not have any of those siddhis. He just has common sense. So, we do have some extra literature on cloning, but we can address that issue. But the bottom line is this. The devotees understand there is nothing extra in this world and not a single piece here is redundant. No need to do anything extra, no need to kick out anything. You just have to make use of whatever is there available. Any other question? The way back.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
We are seeing this drama and two people were depicting as a mind and intelligence and they were just telling something different. What is the difference between voice of super soul and things comes from mind and things come from intelligence?
Good question. The mind, due to its association with this world, has become colored, has taken on so many things. Every time we see something, the mind takes a photograph of it. And that photograph is deposited in the subconscious part of the mind. So the mind looks like an iceberg. Only 1/10 is visible. 9/10 is below the surface. Intelligence depends upon, or the ability to use your intelligence depends upon how strong your intelligence is. So in the example of our chariot, the mind is the lagam, the reins. Intelligence is the charioteer. So when the passenger says, stop! And the intelligence, the charioteer says, oh, I am so weak, I can't pull those horses. The whole thing goes in all directions. So, a sadhu, a yogi, a bhakti yogi is somebody, a real devotee is someone whose intelligence is so strong that with one pull, he can make all his senses, all his horses come to a standstill. So in that, the mind actually helps him. The mind is not bad. The mind is not to be done away with. There are some processes which say, if you want peace of mind, your mind should not have any thought. So when you sit down, okay, today I will not think about anything. That is a thought. So how do you make out of it? So therefore, it is impossible to kill the mind. You have to find it first. Then you can start destroying it. So, when reading spiritual literature, you are slowly making your intelligence stronger and stronger and stronger. So, Krishna is saying that I give knowledge, I give remembrance, and I also give forgetfulness, depending upon your desire. So, the mind will continue its propensity or its nature of going towards different thoughts. But it is the intelligence which has to overpower it. And that is where the super soul helps. The super soul is like a mute observer. Why is he mute? Why is he not coming in the main picture and telling do this, do that? Because we haven't established our relationship with him yet. So this is one aspect. It's a bit of a deep subject as to why God doesn't intervene. Because we are part and parcel of God and we have minute independence because he has full independence. Like a drop of salty sea water will have certain salt in it because the seawater is salty. In the same percentage, not in the same quantity. So if your question is, what is the super soul doing? When the mind is doing its thinking, feeling, willing, and the intelligence is doing its decision making, what is the super soul doing? The super soul as always is just the observer. Only when we take the first step of asking him, finding him out, reading through the books and praying, then we can understand the small voice of the super soul. Compare today's situation for most of us, like we are hearing 6-7 radio stations at the same time. There is a cricket commentary, there is a recipe show, there is a fashion show, and there is a musical program, all in one. And then you want to know what are the news is. Unless you have a very powerful receiver, which can actually segregate all these stations, and you can cut out one by one, and then you fix in on that one particular station, which you want to hear. That's what the Bhagavad Gita teaches about. That the mind may talk of so many things. Right now, in your mind, you might be thinking about how am I to go back home, tomorrow's work, tomorrow's this, tomorrow's that. That's how powerful the mind is. Your physical location is Radha Gopinath Mandir, your mental location is somewhere else. Many times throughout this lecture, you have to practically force yourself again to the hall, isn't it? That's how the mind is. So therefore, the same mind, with the help of the super soul, when it is controlled, you say, now I am in the temple hall, no going anywhere else. Stay here. It stays. Next question. Please give it at the back. Somewhere there. Someone is standing there.
We have 5 more minutes for question.
Hare Krishna Guruji. Out of 18 point, the 17th point is that one should live in a secluded place. So, how is it in Bombay city? So, can you explain?
True. So here, secluded doesn't exactly mean a place where there are no human beings. Secluded means you have to be in the association of like-minded people. For example, previously they used to say, if you want self-realization, go to the forest. You will find trees which give fruits, will have streams which give clear water, there are trees which give bark, and you can construct your own hut and live peacefully. There are no jungles like this today. There are only concrete jungles. So, another meaning, or a more practical meaning of the word here, Vivikta Desha Sevitvam, be secluded. That means, take strong association of those who are like-minded. And then you will be protected from that unwanted association. Next question.
Hare Krishna Guru. Here, much explanation has given on intelligence. Can we define in words what is the intelligence?
What exactly is intelligence?
Exactly what is the intelligence? Can we define?
Yes. The Gita defines buddhi, intelligence, as an energy of Krishna. And the function of intelligence is discrimination, vivek. So we'll stop here. We'll have darshan now. And after darshan, we'll have kirtan.